Hi, I'm your host, Rowan Tonkin, and welcome to Being Planful, the show for FP&A leaders and planning experts. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to Being Planful. I'm really pleased today to be joined by Dave Smith of Inflow Analysis. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
So, Dave, you're one of the esteemed analysts out there in the analyst community. You're talking to customers and tech vendors alike, you know, all day, every day. I imagine your world changed a little bit last year, and I'm sure we can talk about that in a few moments. But I'd love for you to describe to the audience what it is that you do and a little bit about your background.
Funny, what I do, it's so funny. Like my friends and family still cannot really rightfully describe what it is I do. You know, some of my friends think I'm in the CIA. They're like, yeah, you went to China. He went to, you know, he's from Australia. It's like, why are you traveling? You're in the CIA, dude. But yeah, so basically, you know, I've been an analyst, gosh, for 20 years now, right? I mean, I've been in this field. I started at Gartner, actually. And, you know, from my days at Gartner, I believe that I covered email. My first gig was covering email. And then, you know, yeah, Lotus Notes. Oh, man. Oh, yeah. So I'm dating myself, right? You know, but so from covering that, I began to cover the overall collaboration market on a whole. So instant messaging, unified communications. And then my journey took me into how does collaboration communications enable business processes? So then I began to back into lines of business stuff. So what does collaboration mean for sales, marketing, you know, HR, you know, planners and so forth. So it allowed me to move from just being a geek, so to speak, into what does the technology actually mean for people, right? And how does that enable people so I get their jobs done?
Yeah, that's awesome. And obviously with all of that travel and all of that, you know, conversing with different organizations, you get to, you know, a unique view on what that market and what kind of technology means to organizations. Obviously we have a very kind of FP&A minded audience, finance minded audience. And I would say that collaboration technology has is only really emerging in that space.
So funny, for years as I've covered this space, I've been preaching the benefits, you know, of video and, you know, team collaboration and messaging and so forth. And it took a pandemic, Roman. You know, we need this stuff. Yeah, video could actually help me connect with my team, you know, my grandma, right? You know, it can help my kids with distance learning in school. So we began to see that, you know, what we were preaching with digital transformation, that we, you know, all these books about it, and, you know, we've had conferences and all these experts, digital transformation experts, we hired them for, you know, how many, you know, amount of money per hour. They didn't predict none of this, but overnight we saw a transformation literally happen when people's behaviors just changed, and they needed video. They needed the tools to connect and communicate. And so it was, you know, it was digital transformation by fire.
Yeah. And not because of any other reason, but it was also not just digital transformation by fire, but it was digital and remote transformation.
Yes.
And that's what I think, like, some of us, you know, when we talk about, you know, in the tech industry per se, it was like, oh yeah, digital transformation, it's been coming for ages. Well, now it just happened. No one was expecting it to do it from home.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, I remember even at the onset of this, I remember people were like, you know, that were forced to work from home, that didn't work from home before, and they were worried about their environment and what it looked like. And they're like, you know, I'd have professional lighting. And it was like, it's okay. Cause I think we all began to realize that we're in unprecedented times. Like, give yourself a break. It's okay if my dog was just barking. It's okay if the kids walk in. It's like, this is life, man. Relax, you know? So I think there was this empathy that everyone began to have almost across the board, which led to the transformation and the behavior changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when we talk about, you know, that acceleration of digital transformation here at Planful, like, one of the things that we talk about is, you know, finance haven't, you know, many finance organizations didn't think you could close the books without being together in the office, you know, at month end, at quarter end, at year end. And, you know, that most companies have been through three close cycles, many months of close cycles. Yeah, and they still haven't been in the office together. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, think of engineering team. I mean, we're here in the Bay Area, you know, the heart of tech, right? Think of engineering teams who are used to, you know, being, you know, in room together, you know, on whiteboards and planning. And I mean, this must be crazy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, thankfully, I've got a whiteboard beside me, but no one else can see it. It's just full of scribble right now, show notes and things like that. So, you know, Dave, when you think back, like, what is the one thing that 2020 delivered that you hope stays?
You know, I think it delivered, funny, I mentioned a few seconds ago, was empathy. You know, beyond just, you know, the ability that companies, you know, saw that, hey, you could get things done by people working remotely. Me being from Gardner, gosh, I've been remote working, gosh, Rowan, for years. I mean, my kids now, all they've known is daddy works from home. You know, they've never, you know, seen me in an office. So they've just seen me home. And so, you know, and I remember there was a stigma with remote work, you know, years ago, where it's like, yeah, they're just slacking off. Yeah, okay. And yeah, I'm running the dishwasher sometimes, you know, I'm doing the laundry, I'm running school pickup, I am doing all that. But you know, I'm getting work done as well too. But I think that this whole stigma that no, you can actually, if people are empowered with the resources and so forth, they can get a lot of work done. You know, they can miss out on traffic and actually spend more time. Where actually the detriment to it all was, I think I began to, you know, work a little too much, right? You know,
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you know, you're working into the night, you're not realizing, oh my God, have the kids eaten today, right? And it's
Yeah. Overcompensating, you know, trying to get more output, you know, for some organizations that aren't used to it. I worked remotely for almost a decade. So I was kind of, to me, this was a return to normality. My dog thought it was the best thing ever. He's like, man, you used to work from home all the time, and then you went and started back at an office, and I never saw you. Oh, great. The good old days, you know, these are back for me. So he's really happy about this whole work from home situation. And,
Absolutely.
you know, the empathy, I think, is probably the one thing that I would say I want to stay, right? I think that's been a huge shift. This year is like, you know, the
Absolutely.
way that we leaders are leading with empathy, organizations are talking about empathy more, and you know, even, you know, for someone like me who's in marketing, right, our marketing has been more empathetic, right? We're trying to meet customers where they are, understanding their challenges, and that's had, you know, I think, a profound shift for many organizations.
Yeah, it's funny because I had a conversation this week with a lady who's a VP of people, right? And you know, it dawned on me while talking with her, I'm like, wow, we're all in the people business, you know, whether it's marketing, you know, looking at external stuff, or it's, you know, HR leaders, you know, internal stuff, but we're all in the people business. And so that degree of empathy is so important, because as you're dealing, you know, whether it's, you know, marketing with customers, you know, how do you help them experience your brand better, you know, for employees? How do you help them experience the workplace better? So we're all in this sort of people business.
Yeah, and so speaking of people and the workforce, right? That's obviously where, you know, your emergence from email and then into collaboration. You spend a lot of time talking to people leaders. Talk about some of the trends that you're seeing with those VPs of people right now, where they've got a remote workforce. And, you know, do you believe that to be continuing as a trend? And then what does that mean for, you know, some of our audience in finance? You know, what should they be expecting from their people teams?
No, yeah. I mean, it's funny because, you know, this whole thing, you know, it's funny. Think about workforce planning in this climate, you know, from last year. It's almost like an oxymoron, right? You know, how do you plan for this stuff? But in the heat of that, you actually now need to be even more proactive than ever. How do you begin to now anticipate, you know, where the workforce is going? I mean, do we, you know, obviously we're going to have a mix of, you know, hybrid and you know, with in the office and remote. And so I think, you know, implementing sort of a strategic workforce planning, you know, companies can sort of build out, you know, comprehensive talent management processes that support both HR objectives and the needs of their employees. So that the whole notion of the whole people business, you know, piece of it, you know, whether it's, you know, doing the hiring, you know, training and the talent development, you know, parts of that. So I think, you know, it's a way for HR leaders, you know, managers and planners sort of create a roadmap, you know, for key things like, you know, aligning hiring goals, you know, with long-term needs, you know, assigning implementation, right? And follow through responsibilities, you know, to the right leadership, you know, from executive, you know, setting the strategy, you know, from the top down to choosing your best managers to sort of guide that process, you know, the training, right? And so forth. So, you know, retention. So building the company culture as again, mm-hmm. as you focus on people. So all these things, HR leaders have to build down a roadmap for that. And the planning piece of that is more so than just a numbers and analysis thing. And funny, one thing I've always learned from you, even with FP&A stuff, is like the data, you know, the analysis tells a story, right? So what's the story behind the plan, the behind the data that's going to inform the planning? And so that's going to be key, I think, for HR practitioners.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, like one of the things that kind of story element drives is, you know, there's a lot of hidden insights, if you will, for chief people officers and VPs of people that the numbers often don't tell, or they're very siloed. You know, if you think about looking at it, if an FP&A leader was looking at a headcount roster, for example, they might say, wow, there's a lot of turnover in that team for whatever reason. You know, you might not then join that up with engagement survey data or other types of data to really understand the sentiment behind why that may be. Is it a manager? Is it a department that's going through a big transformation? All of those things. And I think that's where finance and HR teams can really join together to help, you know, people teams don't generally have the analysis people on their teams, right? So that's where they need to lean on FP&A leaders that we're talking to help them do that.
Yeah. And it's funny because as you look at what workforce planning does, you know, you're trying to identify, you know, what you need, right? And how you want your workforce to evolve. And a part of that is all about skill sets, right? And a part of that skill set that's needed is the financial planning side of it. You know, how do you sort of marry that together? So it's not just about, you know, from the recruiting standpoint, skill set, it's what skill sets do you need across the business to aid that planning? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, I think in addition to that, one of the things that we've certainly seen from FP&A teams is the cycle time reductions of information have gone from, you know, classic monthly to weekly, weekly to daily. And, you know, people teams have had to adjust to that. Like, you know, certainly here at Planful, we start every executive management team meeting with a team wellness update. We weren't doing that 18 months ago, right? But, you know, we're talking a lot, you know, empathy. Again, we're talking a lot about the empathy of understanding where our team's at, where our managers are at, not only from a health and safety perspective, but from a mood perspective. So we know the sentiment of the team. But when you think about, you know, HR professionals, their cycle times have rapidly increased with their need to organize and how are teams doing that?
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's where, you know, the understanding, having business partners in different areas of the business becomes so important. You know, my wife now, she's an HR, you know, a manager at a tech company here in the Bay. And so I probably hear a conversation I probably shouldn't be hearing.
but you got those sweet earphones on.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, like these Claire boys here, you know. But, you know, but it's a matter. How do you align, you know, with different parts of the business to really have an understanding and to identify what's needed, what the problems are, how are people experiencing the workplace, and what you need to do from a planning perspective to, you know, sort of focus on their needs and their development. And again, focusing on the culture. So yeah, it becomes critical that there be a sort of an analysis of the sentiment of the organization and the pulse of the organization. And so that feedback loop becomes important, and it's frequent feedback is needed.
Yeah, so I would think, you know, the advice that I would certainly give to FP&A professionals is to think beyond the numbers, right? To think about some of the more emotive elements, right, of what's happening in HR organizations. And and you know, that word empathy is something that I think we're hearing a lot about. What would be your predictions for 2021, and knowing that whatever you predict is going to be wrong, because you know, I'm sure we started last year with some predictions and they're definitely wrong.
Yeah. It's so funny. So my running mantra for this year has been like, I don't want to hear any predictions from anyone unless you were able to predict last year. If you were predict last year, I am all ears because you clearly have the pulse on God, the universe, and whatever it is. I think definitely this year, it's funny. I think we'll see this year, you know, more so this hybrid approach, I think, right? To work or an attempt to, and it's going to depend obviously on, you know, healthcare, you know, and mm-hmm. vaccine and therapies and so forth, and how that rollout happens. But I think we'll see an attempt to sort of try to get back to normal by the latter half of the year. But I think a lot of what we're talking about, that empathy piece, is definitely going to play a role, because as you mentioned, we're seeing a lot more now focus on people's well-being, prioritizing mental health. And so we're going to see people having the option and the flexibility to sort of work where and how they want to work. And so the hybrid scenario is going to come mostly from not just companies forcing it, but how people actually want to work. So their desires and their needs and how they want to work, I think, is going to take preeminence over anything else.
Yeah, and how would you see that balance with, you know, I think I've heard a lot recently where CEOs have come out and said, you know what, I was wrong. Yeah. You know, not everyone has to be in the office. You know, we're going to go to a remote first organization. But, you know, there's probably another, you know, maybe this is the silent majority, or they may be silent right now. Yeah. But, you know, organizations that believe, actually, no, we still believe in offices. Yes. And we, you know, how would those organizations try and plan for that from a collaboration perspective?
Gosh, I mean, so for instance, I brought up before, you know, that engineering team, you know, who's used sort of, you know, meeting and just going at it on the whiteboard. I mean, I could see them going back, you know, and mm-hmm. wanting to, because it's certain nature of different types of work and what you do and creativity and innovation will require, you know, different, you know, sort of logistics, and maybe that'll be in person, right? And there's some things where you can be remote. So I think, I think it'll sort of move to where people will realize that, what can be done, you know, remote, let's let it be done remote. But I don't think we're going to see companies force. Matter of fact, I'm seeing companies here in the Bay, you know, chatter and so forth, are saying that, hey, we may continue remote through the rest of 2021. So mm-hmm. I'm hearing that chatter. And then I'm also hearing some that who are planning to come back in the office, you know, for, you know, partially back in the office. So I'm hearing mixed things. But yeah, some of the major companies I'm hearing, you know, saying they're going to still try to be remote throughout 2021, which is interesting.
Yeah. And so maybe less related to current events. Well, it's probably current anyway. But mm-hmm. like when we think about enterprise software and we think about collaboration, mm-hmm. A lot of us think about collaboration as, you know, Slack and Microsoft Teams and other, you know, communication, Zoom, right? We're on a Zoom right now. They think about those types of tools. Do you want to talk about how you're seeing collaboration being embedded into enterprise software mm-hmm. and what some of the trends you're seeing there?
Yeah, you know, so one of the things, and it's funny, we've been seeing this, and I've been writing about this, you know, back from my Gartner days, but we are seeing this, you know, this move towards, okay, how do you look at technology from the sort of architecture approach, right? And look at it as solutions, right? And so you saw, you know, or the Salesforce acquiring, you know, Slack, right? You're seeing all these different actions, these moves of companies who are started out with in different fields, you know, like Oracle and so forth, you know, more, mm-hmm. you know, enterprise software, adding these adjacencies via collaboration to enable the business process. So we're going to see collaboration more so move to how does it impact the business process? And so that's where we're seeing these different companies, you know, who weren't sort of UC or collaboration guys, adding those adjacencies via acquisitions or trying to, you know, do some homegrown stuff. So I think we're going to see how collaboration begins to enable business processes even more. It's been promised for a while. I remember when I first started covering some of the stuff we used to call, I had an acronym, CBP, Communications Enabled Business Processes, but we never saw that, because if you have your SAP, you know, system, right? That's on premise, and your Microsoft or Cisco UC system, never the twain mm-hmm. shall meet, because there's no interoperability there, you know? Yeah. So now with the era of the cloud, the ability to, you know, to sort of open APIs and integrate, we're going to see a lot more of that integration. So, you know, I think more so, FP's falling off here, you know, but so more so we'll see the companies or tech providers now looking at how they can open their platforms even more, you know, via APIs mm-hmm. to integrate, and business process tech providers, software vendors, we're going to see them open their platforms as well to integrate with the Zooms and the Ring Centrals and so forth. So we're going to see more tighter integration of collaboration capabilities within business processes, either from the same company or with open architectures where everyone can sort of, you know, with an open ecosystem, begin to place their best within different platform systems.
And so from sitting back from your perspective, having kind of observed this market for 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. What's the change? Is it the cloud? Is it APIs? Is it compute power?
Yeah, I think we're moving towards simplicity. And I think it's everything you just said, actually. It's all of that, right? It's the cloud, it is enabling it, APIs and so forth. But it's like, how do you sort of take away that layer of abstraction from the user, right? Mm-hmm. Even in the stuff that we cover with workforce planning and HR, there's a whole move towards, you know, employee experience platforms, which is the same thing. It's a glorified portal that's abstracting away all the, you know, the typical HR processes, the tech, the systems, and just surfacing a simple to use user interface that people can access everything they need, do what they need, get their benefits, you know, to do everything that they need right in the simple sort of portal, you know, based process, interface. And so we're seeing the same thing now with business processes. You know, how do you begin to, you know, for instance, like a CRM process, you know, you want to surface up, you know, details about a customer and enable with one click, communication with your sales team and with that customer with all the information needed to help that customer if it's a support situation. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of that now begin to via APIs, the cloud, and so forth. How do you enable these processes with technology? And so take away the friction or the complexities from the user, and they just do what they need to do, sort of an extension of what they do without worrying about what's under the hood of the car.
Yeah. And I think, you know, coming back to that word empathy again, it's right. Understanding what the user is actually trying to achieve. And from a software provider perspective, it's like, well, now we can do that in a way that provides a lot more value than maybe we historically could have because of the open API architectures, the nature of, you know, organizations have moved more of their core systems from on-premise to the cloud, which actually supports that whole capability for the more modern, newer vendors that are cloud first.
Yeah, exactly. And so what I'm seeing and how I've sort of been looking at it is that we're seeing the move towards the experience of things. And, mm-hmm. and so I look at three pillars of that, right? There's like the employee experience, right? The custom experience, and then there's the ecosystem experience, right? And those three things are sort of inextricably linked with each other, because the ecosystem piece, we're talking about the APIs and the open platforms, that's allowing the ability to bring in different capabilities within, you know, different, you know, platforms to give you more of a solution mindset, right? So it's not about, you know, an HR, you know, system, but what's the recruiting solution, right? You know, what's mm-hmm. the solution, you know, for training and learning. And so if you approach from a solution mindset, it doesn't matter who the vendor is per se, it's giving me the solution to get my job done. And so that then enables the employee experience, but then has an impact on the customer experience. So it's a sort of trinity of experiences that, for lack of a better term, I'm calling the experience of things, right?
Yeah. And you know, we see that manifesting in different ways. You know, we're obviously talking about workforce planning and finance, right? If you think about that end-to-end process, it's kind of, you know, headcount approval, like planning, budget mm-hmm. approval, all the way through to employee onboarding and engagement and promotion, right?
Right, yeah.
And the number of tools that it takes to get from budget approval through to engagement, satisfaction, mm-hmm. and promotion, you know, there's probably 15 different business applications involved in that process.
Exactly.
And we see many organizations that they're not even integrated. And so, you know, the use case of workforce planning, just integrating your planning, budgeting, and forecasting tool with your applicant tracking system and your mm-hmm. HRIS removes a huge amount of friction from that process. Indeed. And if you could do that collaboratively, right, then you're starting to really speed up the employee experience, but also the end kind of ecosystem experience.
Absolutely. And it's all, you know, it's all linked together. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, you know, for FP&A professionals, what should they be expecting from, you know, their enterprise applications that they're using every day with regards to collaboration and ecosystem and employee experience.
Yeah, I think it's sort of what we're talking about now. I mean, it's okay if you think through the solution mindset, right? And if you're solving for people, right, whether that be the employee or the customer, right? It's we're seeing now a push or a move towards looking at technology investments, you know, based on okay, what solution is it providing, whether it's, you know, for employees, or for the customer. And so what solution that I'm going for? So again, whether it's whoever the vendor is, what's that bunch of applications that can be brought together in an elegant way, you know, via open APIs, architecture, so forth, that can serve a solution, again, whether it's, you know, recruiting or what have you. And so we're seeing companies sort of look at technology investments based on that. So whatever you're trying to do or offer to a company, it has to be able to plug in and play nicely with their current environment and current infrastructure.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, the plug and play, I think, is the most important part, right? So, you know, as someone who works on the marketing and the sales side, revenue operations, the plug and play nature of my ecosystem is amazing, right? Like we just drop in a new technology and everything plays nicely with everything else. Yeah. And I think, my finance peers don't enjoy that. Right. They don't get, vendors haven't yet provided that plug and play nature for them. Yeah. There's still a lot of friction. And, you know, I that comes back to your whole ecosystem experience. Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Can you talk about that for a moment?
No. Yeah. So I think it's, you know, it's how do you, again, if you go, you think about your ecosystem and think of one of the biggest ones out with Salesforce ecosystem, Microsoft, you know, we have a bunch of people sort of solving, you know, or trying to sort of plug and play within a particular ecosystem or platform. I think, you know, from the workforce and the planning piece of it and finance, so forth, is like, you need to be able to have a platform that's open enough, right? And the platform has to be able to have a consistent data aggregation and data analysis piece. That's kind of, especially for finance, that's going to be the key. I think how you manage the data piece of it is going to be key. So actually, I think I've showed you this to you before. I've developed an architecture that looks at what that would look like from an enterprise perspective, where you want to have sort of a layer of abstraction that people can access whatever they need to access. But then beneath that layer, right, is all the business applications. And then beneath all that is the security layer and the data piece of it, right? So the content is on the move. It can be accessed from whatever device, but also what can you do with that content, right? Create it. Get insights from that data, right? Perform analysis and so forth. So I think it's looking at this stuff, not so much from application to application perspective, but looking at the overall architecture of things and how do they work together, right? And how do they power the people that's actually involved in the business process? So if you look at the architecture, it's people at one layer, the apps that they use, sort of security layer to access those apps, and then that data, that data layer as well.
Yeah, and then, you know, at the top end of that layer is kind of the analysis and then the decision making and the insights trying to service that, you know, to the people, right? So, you know, you mentioned your wife is a, you know, she's a people leader. What's the one thing that your wife would ask of FP&A professionals that they might not be doing today?
Oh my God. I think it's so funny. So her role, so she's this is where I get the term business partner from. It's actually, she alerted me to this. She's like, you need business partners. And FP&A, they have to be a business partner with the HR or the people organization, because it's all the people. It's all, you know, HR is not just, everything's the people organization. I remember being at a HR tech conference some years ago, and someone got a well-meaning, said, it's time to bring the human back into human resources. I'm like, they never left. I mean, I understand the sentiment, but it was like, they never left. But I think for her, it's like, you know, it's having more so partnership with different parts of the business, and finance being one, and having, you know, more of that sort of seamless partnership.
Yeah. And that makes 100% sense. You know, even I would say that the FP&A professionals that I host on this podcast and we talk to every day, I think that's certainly one of those elements where they're trying to move away from being a service desk to a strategic partner.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of what they're trying to do is, how can I do that when I'm you know, bogged down by all of this other stuff, right?
Yeah,
they haven't
yeah,
got that
yeah.
ecosystem experience that you articulated
Yeah,
in
yeah.
their world. So, you know, to actually become that strategic partner, they have to go and solve for some of that ecosystem experience to deliver the customer and the people experience that they're looking for.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what they have, you know, and as we're talking about, they understand the numbers that, and there's a story behind it. And so there's a story to tell. And I think it's better to approach it from, okay, there's a story that's brewing and mm-hmm. here's the story. And so it have the conversation around what's actually happening. I think having those honest conversations makes for better business partners and, you know, makes for more empathy as you begin to work with those different constituents.
And so what do you see, you know, in all of your conversations with your customers and obviously with all the tech vendors, how do you see AI and ML helping, you know, drive the kind of the people experience with enabling to tell that story?
Yeah, so lots of potential in terms of automation and so forth, you know, giving you further insights into the data and helping you to learn, you know, have the system learning, you know, from itself. The drawback I've been seeing, and you probably see this a lot too with your customers, is that a lot of companies are starting these AI initiatives with bad data. You know, mm-hmm. the data is not cleansed and it's not aggregated in any sort of elegant way. And so they're yielding, you know, insights that aren't really insights. it's leaned out like, this is not good, you know? And so there needs to be more of a data management approach to looking at the stuff and cleaning your data and make sure it's ready to even begin to implement AI, because mm-hmm. AI is, it's not going to, you know, yield anything, you know, that's great if the data is not right.
Yeah, already starting with the signal to noise ratio that's very imperfect.
Exactly. So that's one thing I see, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Having been on that end, though, I think you know, from my experience as a technologist, one of the fastest ways to solve for that is you will never know until you actually start trying. So yes. to me, it's a little bit about, you know, walking in with the right expectations of your first AI endeavor, to know that it's not going to be perfect straight away. And maybe whatever you're implementing will help you get there, right? And you know, rather than just saying, oh, well, I've got to do, you know, 12 months of data cleansing and data analysis and get it perfect. Yeah. Just reframe your expectations to say, well, actually, I'm going to get started. It's not going to be perfect.
Exactly.
And I can clean along the way rather than just you know, pushing it off, because you'll be left behind.
No, yeah. So you have to start. But and so to what you're saying, that's where the honesty and the transparency is going to be so important. Because once you begin to expose that stuff and expose the ugly and the messes, you know, and learn from it. Because that's how you learn, right? You have to expose it, you know, all the biases. You have to bring that stuff to the forefront and surface in order to like get it better. You're absolutely right on that. I agree.
Yeah. What do they say? You've got to lay the fish on the table or bring the fish out, right? Before you can actually start doing anything. So Dave, you know, this has been a really insightful conversation. You know, what would be something that you want to leave the audience with today in terms of their understanding of what's coming for them in this collaboration space?
You know, what I would love, and probably follow up for you, is like, I would love to sort of, you know, look at your world, right? And seeing, you know, what FP&A, you know, professionals are looking at, you know, from their lens in terms of, you know, collaboration communications and sort of communications or collaboration enabling business processes, you know, in that way. I would love to kind of learn some of that more, because I think there is a lot of synergy, you know, as we move towards, you know, how do we, you know, sort of, you know, partner, whether it's HR and finance or what have you, sales, marketing, you know, how do we sort of look at this whole, you know, lens of enterprise, you know, business software from a solutions mindset and what that will mean, you know, from a collaborative standpoint?
Yeah. So for those folks listening, go reach out to Dave and tell them what you are actually seeing. I'd love to hear from you, and I'm sure you'll gain a lot of valuable information. Before I leave you though, Dave, I always have two questions for my guests. The first question is a simple one. Who else should I have on the show?
Oh my goodness. So, you know, funny, there is, I have a young lady in mind, Carolina Milanesi. She was just at CES.
Mm-hmm.
And she covers mobility and consumer electronics a lot, but she has a good focus and pulse on people and what trends are. And so I think she'd be really good to speak with.
Well, that'd be great. I'd love the introduction. And then number two, what does being planful mean to you?
Oh my God. So not to sound cliche, you know, but you know, if you only plan, you know, what is it, plan to fail? If you know what's the phrase I'm thinking of here?
You have to
have a plan, right? Or you're gonna sort of plan to fail. And I think, you know, it's being planful is not so much about being dogmatic and so forth, but it's looking at it from a journey perspective. You know, when you go on a journey, there are just certain things you need. And then there's certain things that you discover you need while you're on the journey. And so that's how I sort of view planning. It's stuff you kind of think ahead of time and then realize that I'm going to need some stuff. I'm going to step on a snake. I'm going to fall down. I'm going to need some stuff in, you know, during the journey as well. So
it's funny. Michael Johnson, the famous sprinter, right? The 200 and 400 meter runner. He has a quote where he talks about, you know, he would enter all of his races with a 5-point plan, right? And everyone's like, yeah. Yeah, Michael, you're a sprinter. You don't need a plan.
Yeah.
And his comment back to them is always, you ever been grocery shopping without a list? How'd that work out for you, right? Yeah, like you always come back with stuff you don't want. You always forget something. He's like, you got to have a plan. And, you know, even when I'm running a 200 meter race, it's like, you know, head down, out like a bullet, right? I am fast. And that was a plan. But, yeah,
and I love the Michael, the Mike Tyson quote, right? Everyone in the punch to the mouth. <Yeah. laughs> But that's what I'm talking about. It's like you have a plan, something happens to you, and then you have to adjust, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I'll leave with this, which is a lot of organizations I've spoke to is recently is like it's not about you know, sticking to the plan. It's having multiple plans and managing to them, right? To the various scenarios that you have planned for, right? It's become scenario management, not planning.
It's you know, funny. One of the first things I learned in this analyst business is to have those scenarios, right? So you see analysts, back in the day, we used to call them strategic planning assumptions, where you have put a probability on each one. It's kind of a CIA. Except because like this can happen, and this can happen.
Well, the good news is we know you're not in the CIA because you've spoken about it too much. Anyone in the CIA wouldn't be that avert with it. So
absolutely,
we can disprove that theory for your friends. Well, Dave, it was really good to have you on the show. Look forward to speaking with you soon, and you know, I really hope you have a really enjoyable afternoon.
You as well. Thanks so much.
Right.
Have a great
Thanks,
weekend.
Thanks, Dave. Cheers.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Make sure you hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for stopping by.